This is Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase, our Performing Arts Monthly program dedicated to Iowa's not-for-profit arts and cultural organizations. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom. In April, Iowa's arts scene explodes with incredible offerings. This month, we'll learn about the Heart of Iowa Classical Guitar Concert featuring a nationally recognized artist. We'll find out how a great American musical icon gets jazzed. We'll hear about the career path of the Civic Music Association's guest pianist. We'll get the inside residency scoop on a major composer visiting the state. We'll investigate two original programs celebrating the Negro spiritual. And we'll catch up with an amazing 13-year-old pianist, composer, and arranger who is appearing in Iowa with her trio. That's all ahead on Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase. Thanks for joining us. Bear is one of the most surprising musical stars in the making. Not only does she compose, orchestrate, and perform in a variety of styles, but she also calls American record producer, conductor, arranger, film composer, TV producer, instrumentalist, and humanitarian Quincy Jones her mentor and friend. This 13-year-old is already setting the musical world on fire, and she started blossoming early.
Well, actually, the grandma that discovered me was actually my dad's mom, who has no background of anything musical. And so I was around one-ish, younger. And my grandma heard me, and she thought it was my older brother, but then it was me. And so she told my mom, and my mom's like, yeah, right, it's probably just some phase. And then her mom, my mom's mom, she heard me, and she also thought it was my older brother. And then she's also a pianist, so she called Juilliard, which is kind of a little bit embarrassing, but she called Juilliard, and she talked to them about finding a piano teacher for me. And so that's basically how it all started.
And how old were you when you started at Juilliard then?
Well, I started at Juilliard at around 6, but I started with a teacher they recommended for me at 4.5.
And in the meantime, when you were 3 years old, you started composing.
Yeah, I started writing songs around 3-ish.
And then you were picked up by Hal Leonard when you were 4?
Yes. The first pieces that I wrote are published when I was 4 years old.
So tell us about this concert debut at Ravinia.
I got booked to play at Ravinia after receiving a call about a week or so after I played at my school gala, and I was 5. And so that was the first time I played at Ravinia. And then they asked me back the next year and the year after that.
And when you were 6, you had a whole bunch of cool things happen. Tell us about some of those.
Maybe a few months after I played at Ravinia, we got an email from the Ellen Show asking me to be on the Ellen Show. And then that was basically the first big landmark of my career, and all started going after that.
You also were one of the youngest recipients to receive the ASCAP Award for the Morton Gould Young Composers Award.
Oh yeah, that was so much fun. I got the award for my song Northern Lights, and I was the youngest, but it was really fun and it was such a huge honor.
Well, tell us about your orchestral debut.
Oh yeah, so this December, actually Christmas Eve, I debuted an orchestral version that I orchestrated for Northern Lights, and I also wrote a new orchestral song for the Santa Fe Concert Association in Santa Fe.
When did you make your Mozart Piano Concerto orchestral debut?
I started learning it when I was 6, and I played it when I was 7.
And how about Carnegie Hall? Tell us about that.
Oh, Carnegie Hall was really, really cool. I actually played there 2 times. One when I was 9 and one when I was 10 on the main stage.
And when you were 9, didn't you do something, one of your own pieces there as well?
Yeah, I wrote a song called Peace, We Are the Future. And huge choir sang it and stood in the orchestra. That was pretty kind of surreal because that was the first time I'd really heard my music played by a full orchestra and choir before, so it was incredible.
Well, tell us how you met Quincy Jones and how he became your mentor.
I actually met Quincy Jones through a friend, and I got an email wanting to meet me, and so I met him, and about 3 months later after I met him, he signed me to his management company. And ever since then, he's been an incredible mentor, and he's just an incredible person all around.
And he's introduced you to a whole bunch of jazz venues. Tell us about a few of those.
Oh, I played at Montreux Jazz Festival with him. And that's one of my favorite places I've played at. I played there twice. And
you also played at Dizzy's at Jazz at Lincoln Center and the Blue Note in Tokyo and New York City.
Yeah, the Blue Note in Tokyo was really fun, and the venue was so different from New York, but it was really, really cool. The Dizzy's was also, the view up there is incredible.
Now you, in addition to composing for piano and composing for jazz trios and all sorts of things, you also compose for film and television. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, writing for film is one of my favorite things. I love doing it. I mean, it's really kind of cool to translate the emotion that you're trying to feel on the screen to what you're actually hearing. And commercials are pretty much exactly like that, except for they're like little 30-second versions of it. It's almost harder because you have to try to fit everything in 30 seconds or 60 seconds, but they're kind of like mini movies, but it's one of my favorite things.
And you just recently did 6 national commercials?
Yeah, I did 6 national commercials for Weight Watchers, and not sure if you've heard about it, but they're called The Simple Start, and that was pretty awesome.
So your latest CD was produced by Quincy Jones, so tell us about this disc and that experience.
Well, being in the studio with Quincy was amazing. He is like a walking encyclopedia of jazz music. Or just music in overall. It was pretty magical, and he helped shape the CD so well, and his ideas were priceless. It was amazing.
And he handpicked the trio with whom you were to perform.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Tell us about some of the songs on the disc.
There are a bunch of different styles that were on the CDs. One of them was called Hot Peppers, which I actually wrote for my grandma, because she's from Morocco and she loves hot peppers. Like, she can literally never go anywhere without hot peppers. So, like, if we're going out to dinner or we're just shopping, she just takes them out from her purse wrapped in tinfoil and she starts chomping on hot peppers. It's kind of funny.
Tell us about some of your teachers, because you have studied with some amazing people.
Throughout my life, I've been blessed with the opportunity to work with the most amazing teachers, including Beda Kaplinsky, who's the head of the piano department at Juilliard, which I've been working with since I was around 6, and Ron Sadoff, who's the head of the music department at NYU, who works with me in film scoring, and Mary Sauer, who is my piano teacher back in Chicago, who is the principal pianist of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Those are just a few, to name a bunch of them. It's just been incredible working with these amazing people and sharing their knowledge.
Now, you mentioned appearing on the Ellen DeGeneres Show. Tell us some of the other shows that you have appeared on.
Well, I've appeared on the Ellen Show 6 times, but I've also appeared on Queen Latifah with Quincy, which was really, really fun. I have also been on Nightline, which was really cool, and WGN.
Tell us, what are you working on now?
Well, right now I'm working on a bunch of stuff. There's some really, really exciting stuff that's coming up, but I'm not sure if I can share it with anyone yet, but also new CDs and awards.
So, Emily, how do you balance it all? How do you balance school, and how much do you practice every day? How do you put this all together?
Well, it's not as hard as balancing as you would think. Well, like my most important rule is to always keep it fun. I mean, I balance my friends, and I go to camp, too. I go to camp for a month in the summer. And, I mean, it's kind of a little bit hard juggling the schoolwork and the practicing, but I make it work.
So how much do you practice every day?
It depends. Maybe before a concert, it would be around 3 hours, but it's not just 3 hours in one sitting or 5 hours in one sitting. It's like 20 minutes here, an hour here, half an hour there. And then also, some of that time is jazz, and some of it's classical, and some of it's writing stuff, and some of it's, it can be anything.
So, if you have any spare time, what do you do in it?
Well, since it's actually getting warmer, I love water sports, and I love wakeboarding, and pretty much the outdoors, and I love jet skiing. I also love baking. I'm also an animal lover. I love volunteering at the shelter. It's really fun.
Now, you have your own YouTube video where you're the star. It's a biography of your life, and it's had over 26 million hits. And on that, you said music is only as good as you are. What did you mean by that?
Well, Quincy, he always told me that the music is only good as you are inside. Meaning, as if you're not a good person inside, your music is not going to be as good as it would be if you were a good person.
You also said that you loved inspiring kids. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I love inspiring people. I love getting those emails from people, whether they've been listening to my music to help them go through chemo, or they started up playing piano or another instrument, or just started liking music better. It's really nice to get those.
On a Saturday afternoon, April 18th at 3 p.m., you're going to be appearing at the Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center. Tell us what the audience members will be hearing at that concert.
Well, there's a lot of fun surprises, and me and my trio are going to be playing a full concert for you guys, and a bunch of things include the audience, so be prepared.
Who are the members of your trio?
My drum player is Mark McLean, and he's amazing. And my bass player is Peter Slavov. He's absolutely incredible, too. He plays with Joe Lovano, and he tours with everyone. But they're such great guys, too, and it's really fun working with them all the time.
Pianist, composer, and arranger Emily Bear has been waiting to dive into Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue.
Yeah, for the longest time. I mean, the longest time. My hands were way too small to play the huge chords that, and the scales that were involved in the Rhapsody in Blue until about a year and a half ago. And my hands were finally large enough, and I started learning the Rhapsody in Blue. And I played it 5 times, but I played it with 3 different symphonies. And I love playing that piece because it's like the mix between jazz and classical. There are parts where you can do, it can be a little more free than other classical pieces, but it's always my favorite classical piece.
So what do you think of George Gershwin?
Well, I think he was brilliant to put these two styles together, but I also think that since he was known also in the pop genre and the classical genre, that he has a really wide range of followers that respect and that love his music.
So, were you happy to be able to play the Rhapsody in Blue with an orchestra?
Yeah, it's the coolest thing when you hear those last few chords. It really gets inside you. But it's been one of my dreams, and yeah, I did it. It was really fun.
And tell us, you're going to be playing some brand new works that you just composed when you come to Cedar Falls.
Yeah, I'm writing a few new songs for everyone to hear, and you guys will be the first people to hear them.
That's pretty exciting. So you're going to be working on these with your trio when you get here?
Mm-hmm, yes.
You can hear Emily's new works in world premiere performances and meet Emily Bear in person with her trio. They will be appearing in concert on Saturday afternoon, April 18th at 3 at UNI's Gallagher Blue Dorn. To get more details on her Gallagher Blue Dorn appearance, go to gbpac.com. To view her YouTube video, go to Emily Bear, A Girl with a Gift, a WGN News special. Emily will also be making an exclusive short appearance sometime during the noon hour on Iowa Public Radio Classical on Friday, April 17th. We hope you'll tune in or listen online at iowapublicradio.org for that special sneak peek. On Wednesday, April 8th, also during the noon hour, Iowa Public Radio Classical will present another exclusive presentation with composer and performer Daniel Bernard Romaine. We hope you can join us for Daniel's performance. Daniel will be soloing with the WCF Symphony on April 11th. On Sunday, April 12th, the Southeast Iowa Symphony will perform at the Main Street Cinemas in Mount Pleasant. On April 18th and 19th, the Dubuque Symphony will perform at the Five Flags Theater in Dubuque. And on the afternoon of April 26th at 2 p.m., the Gallagher Blue Dorn will dedicate their final Creme de la Creme concert to its creator, Hugh Petterson. Just ahead, we'll share details about Jack Cooper and his remarkable musical vision. We'll glimpse into a Russian pianist's life during the Cold War. We'll give information about composer Libby Larson's residency. We'll provide specifics about two innovative Negro spiritual programs. And we'll hear about a Des Moines concert featuring a nationally recognized guitarist. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Arts Showcase.
Our organization exists to promote classical guitar music and education throughout the state of Iowa. We sponsor concerts, master classes, and really any event related to guitar that we can to help promote that.
Stephen Kennedy, classical guitarist and the president of the Heart of Iowa Classical Guitar Society. Every year, the society sponsors several concerts. Their last program of the season features guest soloist Robert Grucha.
He is a guitarist based in Cleveland, and he studied with Jason Vio, who I guess I can say the now Grammy award-winning Jason Vio, and at the Cleveland Institute of Music, which it's a very exclusive number of guitarists who get to study there. So that in and of itself is really almost enough of a profile for him. But he's also won many national competitions and participated in several other competitions around the world. And just a great guitarist and is currently concertizing all across the U.S. and Canada. And he'll be presenting a program with music by John Dowland, Augustin Barrios, and then Leo Brower, among a couple of others.
Stephen Kennedy continues talking about other works that Robert will present on his Des Moines recital.
He'll be doing a suite by J.B. Lolay. He was a Flemish Baroque composer, and that's a six-movement suite, music that was originally composed for harpsichord and has been arranged for classical guitar. And then of Augustin Barrios, he'll be playing La Cathédrale, which is a well-known three-movement work, arguably Barrios' greatest composition. And then he'll be doing the Collecta Si Intim by Vicente Asensio, who's a Spanish mid-20th century composer. It's music that very much has kind of a modern sound to it, but it retains sort of the traditional Spanish color and rhythms. And it's a very fairly common piece currently amongst many concertizing guitarists. And then he'll be closing out with El Decameron Negro by Leo Brower, the great Cuban composer. And that's a three-movement work that's based on African folktales.
So why did you pick Robert to come to Des Moines?
Well, after hearing his recordings and reading a little bit about him, we knew that he'd be a great fit for our concert series this year.
So how many concerts do you have in your series?
Well, this is the fourth and final one for the 2014-2015 season. We started the year with a guitar and double bass duo back in October, and then in November we had Anton Baranov, who was the Guitar Foundation of America competition winner from 2013. He was doing his GFA tour. And then in January we had Sean Six, who was a native Iowan who currently lives in Denver and teaches over there. And we obviously love the opportunity to have a native Iowan on our series. And then finally, Robert Grucha here will be our final concert for the year.
So when is this concert going to be and where?
So it's going to be Saturday, April 11th at 7:30 p.m. at Capitol Hill Lutheran Church in downtown Des Moines. And it's kind of down in the East Village area.
And how can folks get more details and information?
They can go to our website, heartofiowaguitar.org. And if you go through there, you can find the events page. And from there, you can see more information about Mr. Grucha, as well as information about tickets and more about time. Tickets will be available at the door for purchase.
Stephen Kennedy, president of the Heart of Iowa Classical Guitar Society. Iowa Public Radio's Performance Iowa Arias in April series will be presenting encore broadcasts of IPR's productions of the Des Moines Metro 2014 opera season, Luther College's Puccini presentations, and the Cedar Rapids Opera Theater's 2014 production of Carmen. You can enjoy these performances on Saturday evenings at 7 and Sunday nights at 10. Our first broadcast tonight will feature the Des Moines Metro Opera's presentation of Verdi's La Traviata. You can find the entire listing on our website at iowapublicradio.org. The University of Iowa Opera will be presenting The Rivals April 9th through the 12th at the Coralville Center for the Performing Arts. The Iowa State Opera Studio will be performing on April 14th at 7:30 p.m. at the Martha Ellen Tye Recital Hall. Drake University Opera will present an evening of Verdi scenes on April 17th through the 19th at the Harmon Fine Arts Center. The UNI Opera will present a showcase on April 22nd at 7:30 p.m. in Russell Hall. And the Co-College Workshop will present a recital on April 27th at 7 p.m. Don't go away. Concert pianist Vladimir Feltzman talks about his appearance for the Des Moines Civic Music. A world-renowned composer comes to Iowa. We explore a national treasure, the Negro spiritual, and we'll zero in on a new arrangement of the music of Charles Ives. You're listening to the Iowa Arts Showcase on Iowa Public Radio.
One thing that I think really stands out about this concert is people who don't normally attend jazz concerts, people who are put off by the repertoire or maybe consider it lightweight for whatever reason. First of all, I think they're wrong. But if they do, this might be something that could bring them in the door. People who know Ives songs could come to appreciate that. And I think they might get caught up in the beautiful harmonic language that Jack uses and indeed all jazz arrangers use.
The University of Northern Iowa's Associate Professor of Jazz Studies and Director of Jazz Band 1, Chris Mertz. Jazz Band 1 will be presenting their spring concert with a guest trio and a brand new chart. They'll also have joining them the nationally recognized composer and arranger and the Associate Professor of Jazz Studies and Composition from the University of Memphis, Dr. Jack Cooper.
Well, Jack contacted me maybe a year or so ago and was offering this project. He had, over the years, done several arrangements of Charles Ives' songs for jazz band, instrumentally, and they're really reimaginings. I mean, they're very creative and very much in the jazz style, although people who are familiar with the songs won't recognize them. But anyway, Jack contacted me about possibly bringing him out to perform some of these pieces with my band. And so I found out later that one of our graduates, Dan Zager, who played lead trumpet in the band in the 90s maybe or early 2000s, had gone ahead and put up the money. And Jack said, okay, I'm coming. And I said, all right, we'll make it happen. And the band has just blossomed this year and just really come on strong. They're very ready to play this music. And in particular, I want to give a shout out to my lead trumpet player, Dan Meyer, from Waterloo West High School, who's just done an amazing job.
Coming with Jack will be a trio. So tell us about the folks who will be performing on this first half.
Yeah, so the Charles Ives arrangements that Jack has done are going to be featured on the second half. On the first half, before I even found out that Jack's services had been procured for us, I was in contact with a drummer friend of mine from Kansas City, John Kazillermuth, who had been living in Des Moines in the recent past, and I'd done a lot of playing with him, and he had since relocated to Kansas City. And he's been playing with this organ trio, which features Mitch Town, a Hammond B3 organ player from Omaha, and also Justin Kaiser, a wonderful trumpet player, part of the whole Kaiser dynasty over there of trumpet players. And so I spoke with John about bringing them out to play on the spring concert, and we were all set. Everything was great, and was kind of planning a program around them. And then Jack offered to make a piece to feature the trio with the band, so that kind of helped lock some things in for the first half. And then we hit another snag, and Mitch, he's not available. And I was able to get Mike Conrad on board. Mike is a very, very talented graduate of our program and recent graduate with a master's degree from the Eastman School of Music.
So that's going to be a lot of fun for the opening half. Plus, you're going to have a premiere involved with this as well.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about why jazz and Charles Ives are a good mix.
Well, you know, Jack would be the better person to talk about this because this all came together really in his imagination. I think Ives' melodies lend themselves to jazz harmonization. They certainly lend themselves to unusual harmonization, which Ives himself would have used, but they seem to suggest extended harmonies and chords that move in unpredictable ways.
So tell us about Jack.
He has been at the University of Memphis for a number of years. He's an alto saxophone player, writer, has taught many, many fine students. In fact, Anthony Williams, who is back on faculty now at UNI, our trombone professor, studied with Jack at the University of Memphis when he was working on his DMA. Another one of our graduates, Dave Lissick, also studied with Jack in jazz composition. So we've had a little bit of a connection with Jack and the University of Memphis over the years.
And he's done some work for some pretty impressive names.
He's highly respected in the field, does a lot of commercial work and jazz work, and really understands how the orchestra works.
So tell us then, what will folks hear when they hear the second half of this concert and the music selections from the disc Mists, which has Charles Ives for jazz orchestra?
We have five selections from that album that we're going to be performing. Some of them are very, very familiar. In fact, as I was explaining this to friends, the title that came up over and over again was The Children's Hour, and that's one that everybody seems to know. So I'm sure that many, many of the concert attenders will recognize that piece. We're also playing the song Mists. We're playing Tom Sails Away. We're playing Watchmen and By the River.
So how can folks get more details, and when and where is this?
All right. The concert is April 10th. That's a Friday evening, 7:30 p.m. in Bankston Auditorium.
The University of Northern Iowa's Associate Professor of Jazz Studies and Director of Jazz Band 1, Chris Mertz. UNI's Jazz Band 1 Spring Concert featuring a guest trio, a new arrangement by Jack Cooper, and selections from Cooper's new disc called Miss, Charles Ives for Jazz Orchestra, will be held on April 10th at 7:30 p.m. in Bankston Auditorium in UNI's Russell Hall. That concert is free and open to the public. On April 19th at 3 p.m., the UI Latin Jazz Ensemble will perform at the Riverside Recital Hall. ISU's Jazz Ensembles 1 and 2 will perform on April 22nd at 7:30 p.m. at the Martha Ellen Tye Recital Hall. The Area 51 Jazz Combo will present a concert at 6 p.m. on April 26th at the University Capital Center Recital Hall. On April 30th at 7:30 p.m., the UI Jazz Rep Ensemble will perform at Riverside Recital Hall. The Grinnell Jazz Ensemble will perform on April 30th at 7:30 p.m. in the Buxbaum Hall. Also, on April 20th, Holocaust survivor and artist Miriam Brisk will speak at Sabin Hall on the UNI campus. Dr. Brisk will also be a part of the Holocaust Remembrance Ceremony on April 21st at 7 p.m. at the Grout Museum in Waterloo. Just ahead, composer Libby Larson visits the state. We focus on the heritage of the Negro spiritual, and we learn about the musical journey of Russian-born pianist Vladimir Feltsman.
supposed to speak for itself, so whatever anybody can talk about music, if it doesn't work on its own, it doesn't help much. So I hope that music will speak on its own.
Concert pianist Vladimir Feltsman. Vladimir will be heading to Iowa on May 1st to present a 7:30 p.m. concert at Drake's Cheslow Auditorium as part of the Des Moines Civic Music Association's 90th anniversary season. Vladimir shares some background on his amazing career.
I was born in a musical family. My father was one of the top composers in Soviet Union, popular music, songs, operettas, scores for movies and so on. My mother was a musician too. She was my first teacher. And then my life followed certain pattern which many of known musicians in Russia kind of did. So I went to special music school in Moscow, which was at that time, I think, the best music school in the world for young kids, musically gifted. I spent 10 years and then I entered Moscow Conservatory. I studied with one of the greatest teachers of 20th century, Jakob Fleer, for 7 years, 5 years in conservatory, and then I did doctorate studies and was his assistant. I won first prize, the Grand Prix, on Marguerite Long International Piano Competition in Paris at 1971. And then at 1979, I applied for exit visa from Russia. It took me 8 years to get it. That was not the best, most joyful time in my life. And then at 1987, I was finally allowed to leave Soviet Union. I came to United States, played in White House, my first concert then at Carnegie Hall. And the rest is history, so I'm still active. I do quite a bit of teaching. I teach on the faculty of Manes College of Music and SUNY New Paltz College at New Paltz, SUNY State University of New York. I do quite a bit of recording. I just came back yesterday from London where I recorded, it was second batch of Schubert sonatas, so late next year the whole complete Schubert sonatas will be released on Nimbus, which is my label from Great Britain. That's about it.
You mentioned that in 1979 you tried to emigrate, but at this point in time you said it was uncomfortable, but they sort of banned you from performing while
they didn't sort of ban me. They banned me without sort of. So for 8 years it was a Cold War. Soviets came to... They invaded Afghanistan at 79, actually, and so it was just pretty, pretty dark years in international relationship and especially in Russian history, and many, many people, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of Jews were banned from emigrating, from leaving Soviet Union. So I was one of those. And then because of pressure from outside, and in particularly from President Reagan and Mrs. Reagan. So finally Soviets kind of decided that holding me is a bigger pain in the neck than letting me go, and they let me go. So that's about it.
One advantage of being a pain in the neck, it actually pays off once in a while.
Well, in the long run, if you live long enough to see it.
On May 1st, you're going to be performing in Des Moines at Cheslow Auditorium on the Drake University campus.
Yes.
Tell us about the works that you're going to be playing.
I think it's actually quite exquisite program. It's Schumann and Mussorgsky, and all of these works are kind of interrelated. I start with Kinderszenen, which is exquisite work by Schumann. It was not written for children, obviously. It's a mature piece, but explore world of children, their purity, their problems, their likes and dislikes. Schumann had amazing insight in a children's psyche. Then second piece will be Faschenschwank in Wien, which is Carnival in Vienna, which is brilliant, brilliant work of five movements. And it's kind of a very picturesque work. And then after the break will be Pictures from Exhibition by Mussorgsky, which is, to me, a single greatest work for piano solo written by any Russian composer. which also has to do with images and pictures, as the title says. So I think it's a good work, and I hope that people will enjoy it.
Well, the Mussorgsky pictures, people often are more familiar with the Ravel orchestration than they are with the original piano performance.
Yes, that's the case sometimes, but I think original is much superior to any other arrangement, and it's very, very powerful work. I think it's known enough, it was recorded many times, and it's a part of standard Steppel concert repertoire nowadays. And I played it, actually, I think, more often than any other solo works, several hundred times, I think. But still enjoy doing it. It gives you certain images, I think, very vivid, very strong, and it gives you a certain flavor of Russia and the Russian culture, Russian spirit, and Russian psychic as no other work does.
Concert pianist Vladimir Feltsman will be performing on May 1st at 7:30 p.m. at Drake's Czeslaw Auditorium as part of the Des Moines Civic Music Association's 90th anniversary season. The Des Moines Music Civic Association will honor any of the remaining tickets for the canceled Andre Watts recital. You may still order tickets online for Vladimir's recital at civicmusic.org. If the concert has any tickets left, the remaining will be sold at the door. On April 12th, the Amera Piano Quartet will perform at 7:30 p.m. at the Martha Ellen Tai Recital Hall on the ISU campus. On April 30th at 7:30 p.m., the a cappella vocal ensemble Cantus will perform at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Iowa City. At Salisbury House in Des Moines on April 23rd, they will be hosting Professor of History David Gelman discussing his book, Emancipating New York. And on April 30th, a classical trio will perform at 7:30 p.m. Don't go away. We'll glimpse into the enduring grace of Negro spirituals and hear about composer Libby Larson's residency at UNI. This is Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Arts Showcase.
Living your life as a working composer in this country today is not easy. And I think our students, especially our composition students, and students who may not know that they're composers yet, may be inspired, we hope, by her presence here. And it infuses a different kind of energy. Having the person that's so far removed just by looking at a piece of music, a piece of sheet music on your stand, versus the embodiment or the person who channeled or thought up all of those notes and how she put them all together. I think that's inspirational. The electricity's different in the room when we have the actual person who wrote this music with us. So come and see the program. It's going to be something for everybody. Some things are going to challenge our listeners and some things are just plain fun. And so there's a lot to be heard.
She is, among all composers living today, one of the great ones. With over 500 works, 15 operas, won a Grammy, and just a terrific composer. I couldn't be more excited to have her here. She's one of the greatest composers, period.
UNI's Professor of Conducting and Music Theory and Director and Conductor of the Northern Iowa Symphony Orchestra, Dr. Rebecca Burkhart, and UNI's Associate Professor of Music and Director of the UNI Marching and Symphonic Bands, Dr. Danny Gallion. Rebecca and Danny share the background circumstances, providing UNI to have one of the world's most respected composers in residence on campus.
We had performed a piece of hers called An Introduction to the Moon, which she wrote in 2005, which I really loved because it's one of the only pieces for wind band that incorporates improvisation, where the players get to improvise while some poems are being read about the moon. and a parent of one of our students in the audience, his name was Lou Pine, who is a musician and actually president of the Joseph Schillinger Society, who was a Russian music theorist, had approached me and said that he was friends with Libby Larson and that he loved the work that we performed and wanted to try to connect us in some way so that we could bring her in for a residency, and also offered to provide some financial support to support her, you know, the fees associated with bringing her in. It took a few years for us to make this happen, to find the right time to do it and some additional funds to bring her in. But this really started about 4 years ago when we performed a piece and just happened to have a parent who had a close connection with her.
And she's a big deal in the fact that she's written many works in all sorts of genres.
Yes, she's just right up the road in Minneapolis, and she's a wonderful composer. We're just delighted that we can have her here. My first contact with her music was when I went up to Minneapolis or St. Paul in 1989 to see her opera Frankenstein be performed, which was a terrific experience, and I had never really been exposed to her music in that way before, and ever since I've been enamored of her writing. It's not easy, and it challenges the listeners and the students, but she writes for voices just as well as instruments. She's terrific. We're actually doing a piece called What the Monster Saw for Chamber Orchestra. It kind of came out of that operatic experience for her. It's based on Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, so it's with slides, and it's very cinematic in its character.
Well, tell us about her residency at UNI, and that's going to be on April 13th through the 15th. So what is going to be happening with Libby Larson on campus?
While she's here, she'll work with our composition students. She'll give a lecture that's open to the public and to the University and School of Music. She'll also work with our symphonic band and orchestra and women's chorus, and we'll give a performance of her works on Wednesday night to close her residency. We actually have a recital of her work, some of her smaller works for soloists or chamber players at 6 o'clock on Wednesday, April 15th, followed at 7:30 the same night by the performance by the orchestra, women's chorus, and symphonic band.
Tell us about the pieces that you're going to be presenting.
The orchestra will open the concert. We're doing a work called Ancient Places, which was actually written for the Winona State Orchestra in 2008, and it's about the landscape of Winona. And then What the Monster Saw for Chamber Orchestra. And then the women's chorus will do three pieces today, this spring, from this set. And one of them is accompanied by chamber orchestra. So we have a great juxtaposition of What the Monster Saw. This is a very sort of harsh and dramatic piece to a piece that's about cancer survivors, and particularly breast cancer survivors, with the women's chorus. And Amy Katsanis is conducting that. And then Danny will present several pieces with the symphonic band.
Yeah, the symphonic band will perform three of her works. The first is called Grand Rondo, and it's subtitled Napoleon Dances the Can-Can with Italy, Hungary, and Poland. And it's a work inspired by some political cartoons that are satirical cartoons from that time that poke fun at Napoleon's attempt to control those three countries. This is Napoleon III, who tried to go in, and those countries essentially just ignored him, and he just left. And so it's a kind of a humorous work. And then our next piece is going to feature our saxophone professor, Ann Bradfield, who will play Holy Roller, which is one of my favorite saxophone pieces and really one of my favorite pieces. It's a work inspired by the turn of the century, 3-year revival in Los Angeles that started the Pentecostal religious movement. And so the title Holy Roller refers to the speaking in tongues and rolling on the floor and shaking of the revivalists. It's called America's Longest, I think, Revival, and it uses some American spirituals, and it's just spectacular writing for the saxophone. And then we're going to close with another performance of An Introduction to the Moon. There's some written writing. The performers play some notated music, and then they're given chances to improvise while poems are being read that are about the moon. It's really a terrific piece. The last time we performed it, it was probably the highlight of the performance. So the students are excited to have another chance to perform this piece, especially under her guidance.
How can folks get more information and tickets and that sort of thing?
Everything's free, open to the public. So Gallagher Bluedorn Performing Arts Center, the recitals in JB Hall, the small organ hall. and then at 6 o'clock on the 15th, and then the concert with the orchestra, the band, and the choir, we're in the Great Hall at 7:30. So they can come and make a whole evening of it and meet Miss Larson and hear her music and be inspired.
UNI's professor of conducting and music theory and director and conductor of the Northern Iowa Symphony Orchestra, Dr. Rebecca Burkhart, and UNI's associate professor of music and director of the UNI Marching and Symphonic Bands, Dr. Danny Gallion. Libby Larson's UNI residency runs between April 13th and 15th. Just ahead, music of protest and a festival of spirituals. This is the IWARD Showcase on Iowa Public Radio.
Go tell it on the mountain, over the field and everywhere. Go tell it on the mountain that Jesus Christ is born.
It is a celebration of America through this music, and I want to draw the community in my love of spirituals to bring all of these components of the Negro spiritual, of the experience that still needs to be told, still needs to be respected, and still needs to be lauded by us as Americans, because it is ours together.
Recruitment and retention coordinator at the University of Northern Iowa and concert artist Celeste Bembry. In early May, Celeste is presenting a special program revolving around the rich history of the Negro spiritual. This month, she is leading a workshop on the music of protest, the Civil Rights Movement.
It is a program regarding music of protest, and it's sponsored by the African American Museum of Iowa on April 20th. And it is an exposure of how people will use music to voice their opinions, to take a stand, and it is a medium also that rallies humankind behind a cause, culturally, politically, socially. And so this is an exposition of that. It's going to be a lot of fun where they'll hear music, we will discuss music critically, perform it a little bit, and then those that come to the workshop, they'll be creating music of protest.
So why is music such a powerful medium?
I think because the human condition, we have a common denominator, and that is the right to live in liberty and in happiness. And when there are systems that prevent that, people rally behind a cause, and those simple melodies, those simple calls for activisms resonate well with us as human beings. We even taught ourselves the ABCs by singing them. And so music is really crucial to the core of how we adopt and learn.
So what kinds of music will people be hearing at this workshop?
They're going to hear music from the current situation out of Ferguson, Missouri, where protesters interrupted the St. Louis Symphony, a requiem, how appropriate. And they came in and chanted this moment of protest. And it was done so respectfully and eloquently that the response was that the audience began to applaud. The symphony orchestral members began to applaud. And it was so powerful in this 2-minute clip to see how music can affect us. That yes, I need to think about these things. Yes, I need to respond.
So tell us about some of the other civil rights songs that people will hear.
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's a very familiar movement as a part of our American history, and songs that are really familiar. And we will look at Pete Seeger's music. We're going to look at spirituals and how men and women from all over the country came to one location, and having these very familiar songs resonate through activism and hope a lot of hope in the texts and commitment to do the right thing. And so it really emboldens and encourages people to know that their voice matters and the collective voices matter. And it's a powerful thing to be of one voice in a mass of people.
So tell us then a bit about, you're going to be doing or creating your own music in this session. So what types of things might be involved with that?
That will be teamwork. And so we will ask the men and women who are at the session to break apart in groups, and I will guide them to issues. They can come up with their own, and that we will look at simple poetry and verse systems and come up with poetry that would be of one voice of that group. And then we will take that poetry and then sample it into a well-known song like If I Had a Hammer or We Shall Overcome. And so it will be something relevant to the folks at that moment in time.
Concert artist Celeste Bembry. The Music of Protest Civil Rights Movement Workshop will be held on April 20th at 6:30 p.m. at the Fort Dodge Public Library. This free workshop will be presented under the auspices of the African American Museum of Iowa. For more details, call 515-573-8167. On May 3rd, Celeste is also presenting a celebration of the enduring grace of our historic national treasure, the Negro Spiritual. This program was initiated when Waterloo's First Congregational United Church of Christ asked Celeste to be part of their fine arts series.
I'm really looking forward to this presentation. There's going to be so many interesting things for the audience to take in, for this is a story of our American history together. And it's not a black thing, it's not a white thing, it is ours, and to take ownership of this art form. You know, we're talking about 1690, where Africans were first coming into the United States. They had already been in the Caribbean and South America 100 years, even before they came to the United States. And so I talk to students, and their grandparents are just getting here at 1870, so they're kind of the newer Americans. And so this is an expression of how historic this is, and I want for it to be an educational experience as well as a performance experience.
Well, you're doing a lot of really neat things, mm-hmm. and one of these things is that on the day before May 3rd, you are collecting all these choirs together, and you're going to be having people sing at the presentation. So tell us how this is going to work.
There are a few spirituals on program that just beg for community. And as we know, music is a vehicle for a cause and community. And so we wanted it to be embellished just beyond the choir that is at this particular church and invite in community to be a part of the experience. And so there's going to be a variety of ways that that will happen. Hopefully I'll have a banjo player in the mix, and hopefully an ensemble that will do some of the plantation work songs that we have planned, as well as myself being a voice of a former slave, and really do some acting and bringing in the moment of time into the presentation as we present these spirituals.
So this is going to be held at the First Congregational Church in Waterloo. Mm-hmm. So their choir is participating.
Yes.
And then you also have another choir.
Yep, Antioch Baptist Church will be participating and looking for great singers to enhance both choirs to come in. And so some personal friends of mine, I'm calling the trump card, for some personal friends of mine who are great voices, come sing, come be a part of this.
So you're opening with these songs from the original Journey, the really early spirituals, mm-hmm. and then what are you going to work from there?
The program is going to start with the sorrowful songs, and it's going to be a multimedia presentation with video as well as sound bites of former slaves as well as live performance, and so to really capture the lamentation of the condition of enslaved people. And then we'll move along, and the body of works that are field holler songs. And we're going to talk about Sylvie bringing water to the field workers, or Ho, Emma, Ho, you know, or we're going to talk about Follow the Drinking Gourd and those songs that talked about a successful route to escape the tyranny of slavery.
And then after that, you're leading into two more different categories.
Yes, yes, an exaltation of Jubilee after Emancipation Proclamation. Then it took a year for people to really know what had occurred. And so there's good news out there, and Heaven Bound, and I'll Stand, and Peter, Ring the Bells. And so there's these songs that are so triumphant and jubilant in their content.
And then you're going to be following that with more.
Yes, yeah, a body of work that is about such hope for the future. And as people of faith, there is an irresistible future there. And so the songs are about hold on and hold out your light and soon one morning. And so just a great celebration of moving forward.
Well, these are wonderful songs, mm-hmm. and they're still relevant today,
absolutely.
As you were just saying, mm-hmm. with things that have happened in Ferguson, yep. and other locations.
Mm-hmm. All are welcome. It's absolutely free. Come and be a part of community celebrating our national treasure, the iconic Negro spirituals.
Concert artist Celeste Bembry. The Festival of Spirituals, Then and Now, will be held on May 3rd at 3 p.m. at Waterloo's First Congregational United Church of Christ. For details about this free concert, please call the church office at 319-234-8927 or go to firstcongucc.org. The Des Moines Arts Center has an exhibition called Field Road Cloud, Art in Africa, continuing through April 19th. Grinnell College on April 18th is hosting the Young Gifted Black Choir at 4 p.m. at Sebring Lewis Hall. And on April 19th, they are presenting the Art of Negro Spiritual at 4 p.m. at Herrick Chapel. Today's Iowa Art Showcase broadcast is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Program thanks for the show goes to Emily Baer, Stephen Kennedy, Chris Mertz, Vladimir Feltzman, Rebecca Burkhart, Danny Gallion, and Celeste Bembry. Production thanks goes to Iowa Public Radio's Tony Daner. Production assistance was also given by IPR's Phil Moss and John Pemble. Thanks for the show also goes to IPR's Jason Burns and Gerd Van Leeuwen, and music director Al Scherz. Program research was provided by Nick Carlo, Nick Schumacher, and Stacia Fortunes. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom. Thanks for joining us. For more information on Iowa Public Radio's programming schedule and Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase, please visit our website at iowapublicradio.org.
Keep the straight and the narrow way. Don't you let nobody turn you round, turn you round, turn you round. Don't you let nobody turn you round. Keep the straight and the narrow way.